WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth,
very
Charlie
good.
Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it's really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. My name is Kevin Tachi, and we have a fantastic show lined up for you. We start the first hour with Plymouth County Commissioner Chairman Greg Hanley. He'll stop in, and it's hopefully something that we're going to do on a regular basis. I think I have a great relationship with all three of the county commissioners, and Greg serving as chair. We'll have him come on and give us a little bit of a county update. How are things going around the county? Budget season is upon us. Still distributing the CARES Act. So much to talk about. So we'll talk to the chairman in just a couple of minutes. Then we're going to speak with Evan Smith. Evan is a Halifax resident. He actually appeared on this radio program in March with a group of folks. And we talked a little bit about a peace flag. And the peace flag became a bit of a conversation. We actually had a secondary conversation. And this one is about a resolution that has been reached in regards to the peace flag in schools or something of facsimile of the flag. So we'll talk with Evan about that. Hour number two, we will start with State Senator John Keenan. He joins us now. I know you're saying to yourself, well, don't you normally do senators and state representatives in the first hour at the beginning of the show? Well, we kind of move things around just for this particular radio program. So we will speak with the good senator coming up at 7 o'clock. And we have a bunch of things we could talk with him about, not only some of the legislation that he has either filed or amendments that he has put forth, but we could also chat with him about the state Senate. They are up next in the budget process for fiscal 2022. We'll get his take as to what he foresees and what he's looking at, especially when it comes to local aid. We know that a lot of the communities and the local leaders, the one thing that they look forward to from our state representation is what we're going to receive in local aid, whether it's for education or for road repair. We'll speak with him about that. And we'll have like a little vignette. We're going to speak with Julia Wiper. Julia is a co-owner of three locations. She is also someone who does physical therapy. The three locations happen to be in Whitman, Hingham, and the South End in Boston. We'll chat with her about that. And then we close things out with Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan will join us. Several things to talk with him about. Obviously, the natural thing will be to get a COVID update with him, but also talk with him a little bit about a special day for former champion, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, who died recently, who passed away. There's going to be a ceremony, a street name. We'll talk with him about that. We'll also talk with him about a clinic that is coming up for high school students or for students to be able to go and get their COVID shot, as well as New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft paying a visit to the City of Champions. We'll talk with him about that and much more. Right now, though, time for us to focus out on the roadways one final time. being brought to you by Brennan's Smoke Shop, online at brennansmokeshop.com. Don't forget, there are locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, and Weymouth.
Well, thanks, Kevin. The expressway southbound is slow from Furnace Brook to the split. The northbound side is inching along from Columbia Road up through the tunnel to the Zakim Bridge. Routes 3 South and 24 South are both in good shape heading down to Route 44. 93, that's clear in either direction between Braintree and Canton. This report is sponsored by Whole Foods Market. This week at Whole Foods Market, get all Ciate products 25% off through May 4th, plus an extra 10% off for Prime members while supplies last. See more in the Whole Foods Market app. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm Lisa DeMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan Smoke Shop. I gotta give credit where credit is due. Al Gamash & Son, Michael Green Painting, and Foley Electric. Without these local contractors, Brennan Smoke Shop would be ugly. Every store we open, these guys get better and better at building them out. Take the new store in Hudson, New Hampshire, for instance. We put the display cases and the huge, absolutely enormous walk-in humidor on the same light switch. Thank you, Foley Electric. Justin Gamash, the & Son, put a ramp in for the two-wheel dolly that carries the product from our local wholesaler, William Zoll & Son. Michael Green Painting. Oh my God, dude. They're like thing one, thing two, thing three, thing four, except they put paint on, not take it off. Come see their workmanship at our new store in Hudson, New Hampshire, June 2021. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts and soon New Hampshire. Customers must be 21 years of age or older, and proper ID is required.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk.
And we return for the very first segment of Monday Night Talk. And I know I say this, there's always a little disclaimer at the very beginning whenever we deviate from the normal. Usually the first segment of Monday Night Talk is reserved for the state reps and the state senators or constitutional officers. Sometimes we've had the lieutenant governor on, we've had the governor on, although because of the pandemic, we haven't seen either of them because they usually do regular updates and kind of keep their distance from the press at this moment until we're into the clear. But from time to time, I do go off script, and we have other individuals, other elected officials, other important officials from in and around the South Shore to talk about something that's going on, something important in their neck of the woods. Joining us for this segment, he is the chairman of the Plymouth County Commissioners, serving all 27 communities, one city, 26 towns. We have Greg Hanley joining us. Hello, Commissioner. How are you?
Very well, Kevin. Thank you for inviting me on. Looking forward to a wonderful discussion about the county.
Well, now, see, and I said this to you, and I tease this. I know this used to be reserved for other chairmen. Your prior chairman used to take liberties and come on and join me, whether it be every couple of weeks or depending on what the subject was or even given a budget update or say something about the county farm. But, you know, we've turned the page and you are the current chair. So I would love to have you on a regular basis if you're so willing.
Those are very big shoes to fill. We have actually given former Chairman Pallotta a title, Chairman Emeritus. He's on speed dial. We can't afford to pay him, but we are going to get him free entry into the Marshfield Fair as the champion milk producer. Goat milker, yes. He produces the milk. And we don't want to give that away. Give him something to do.
No, because I know that's when it comes to the 4-H program, that was the one thing that Commissioner Pallotta crowed about was how he was probably one of the best goat milkers, bar none, than anybody here in the county.
I'm reminded of Michael Dukakis riding in the tank with that helmet on when I see Dan's picture of him milking that goat. So Commissioner Hanley has refrained, although I've done very well in the pie eating contests.
Haven't we all? Haven't we all? Because you know what? Let's be honest. There is no real losers when you're in part of a pie eating contest.
True. It's just getting the blueberry stains out. It's very messy and costly.
It's very messy. So how are things going in the county, in Plymouth County?
Well, to be honest with you, Kevin, things couldn't be better. You know, as you recall, 8 years ago when I first get into office, I was full of the same excitement that young Jared Valenzuela is. You know, you come in, you're young and you're full of energy and you have projects and goals you want to accomplish. And the difference between now and then is when I got here, they told me the cupboard was bare. And in that calendar year, we had a $750,000 structural deficit. The county was in debt over $64 million with the cost of OPEB liability and retirement and mortgages on the Registry of Deeds building. We just were told that there was not much that we could do other than try to focus on some financial programs that would restore fiscal health. And thank God for the team that we have down at the county. Tom O'Brien is the only certified county treasurer in the Commonwealth. Georgetown graduate, just is such a great asset and such a great public servant. He, alongside with John Buckley, the Register of Deeds, John, a former commissioner in Plymouth County, has been the steward of the Registry of Deeds. And as you know, they're a big revenue generator. We get a percentage, I think it's 10.825, as Dan would say, cents on every dollar transacted in deeds excise comes back to the county, which doesn't say much for us in terms of solving debt. But we've done an amazing job with the team we've assembled to now take that debt, which was $64 million, down to $17 million. And we've been forgiving debt along the way for the last 8 years, to the point where young Jared Valenzuela can come in and actually do the projects that he wants to do, because we're going to have reserve funds, you know, the creation of a stabilization account. I mean, we've done so many good things that have put the county on such good footing, and we've done so many tremendous things in terms of finances for the communities that they've all been able to take advantage of. So to answer your question, the county couldn't be better.
Well, knowing that here we are a week later since the House of Representatives debating their budget last week, if we're looking in the near distance, where is the county's budget? When do you start looking at the numbers, or when do you finalize your numbers to go before the advisory committee and talk to the communities as to what your budget's going to be for fiscal 22?
Yep, we just finished the audit on 20. So that audit showed a surplus of funds that can now be put in our stabilization account. So that will assist us. As you know, the deeds excise, as I mentioned, was the primary source of funding for the county. And then each community has an assessment that they pay to the county for county services, such as the courthouses and all the programs that we run, like 4-H and the retirement system, the healthcare system, the pension. So there's a lot to it. You know, the thing about county government, it's really an administrative form of government. And now that we've been declared solvent and actually have a great bond rating, we're going to be able to do things for the county that we weren't able to do before, because we just, fiscally speaking, weren't able to borrow money or bond or anything like that. So again, hats off to the team. You know, we're very fortunate to have the dedicated public servants that we have in the county.
Do you feel that Plymouth County government is the, it's the great comeback story? Because there was a point in time when there was talk about abolishing it. You know, there's only so many counties left in Massachusetts. It's an old form of government. Do you feel that Plymouth County government right now is living a feel-good story?
Oh, there's definitely been a resurgence. In, to be honest with you, when I first ran for election, there was an actual charter commission convened and duly elected to decide the fate of the county. And because the debt of the county was so great, they could have dissolved the county like some of the other counties in the Commonwealth. But the cost associated with that dissolution would have assigned an apportioned share of that $64 million to each and every town without the benefit of any services, anything. So we were fortunate in the last 8 years, like I said, to improve the fiscal health with the things we've done. But the resurgence of the county and the relevance of county government has been since the inception of the CARES Act. As you're aware, we took on the obligation of $90 million that the federal government set aside for unanticipated covert expenses that cities and towns had not prepared for. And against public sentiment, we took it on with a lot of animosity and angst on behalf of the state. But I can proudly say that, and by the way, if I can just do an aside for 1 second, this is going to hopefully put to end WATD's question of every debate, county government, yes or no. Well, county government is here, it's healthy, and it's here to stay. So hopefully at the end of this, Kevin, you and I can conclude with, maybe I'll ask you the question, county government, yes or no. But we certainly have been a tremendous asset to our member communities, and everywhere we go now, that people are so grateful because our turnaround time, our administration cost. We have been publicly lauded by the White House as the single entity in the country with the lowest administration rate for the money received, less than 1% of the money that we have spent to administer the program. And we were called out, I couldn't believe it, by the White House as a community, as a public entity that is really doing its best, and we've been recognized for it. So, and our colleagues in government recognize it. Interestingly, when you get down on the borders of the counties that didn't accept the money, the amount of processing and the amount of extra work that the treasurers and the auditors and the legal people in their communities have to comply with the guidance of the CARES Act, we were able to recognize real quick that we could be an asset to those communities and save them the cost to administer. And with a 1% cost, who can argue with that? So, yeah, things are very well.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with Greg Handley. He is the chairman of the Plymouth County Commissioners, and he is openly lauding 95.9 WATD to no longer ask that question. County government, stay or go? I will tell you, I will tell you that when I asked the question last week for normally the moderator, Christine James, asks the question to see where people stand with county government. I was kind of expecting a resounding yes. I really was. I will say this, it goes without saying that I, you know, asked it as because our moderator couldn't be there. So, you know, carrying on that tradition. But I was surprised by the answers, and I even followed up by saying, well, didn't your community receive some well-deserved, you know, some well-needed COVID relief money from the CARES Act from the county? And there was a yes. So it's interesting that was the answer, the response that I got, because I would expect that people would say, wow, this is fantastic that the county took initiative, stepped up, saw a need. And here's the other thing, and that we've kind of omitted here, was is that when the initial ask was put in regards to the state, are you going to give, you know, if the monies that you receive, will Plymouth County, each community, get 100% of that money? And there was no guarantee. The state could not guarantee it. But the county commissioners, the county itself, was able to get that money and has been dispersing it since.
And you hit it right on the head, Kevin. Once that question by the governor was asked and answered, and he could not guarantee it, it was our obligation as the county to step up and do the best we could for our member communities. I will say, as hot as it was with the public relations campaign that was anti, that was put on by the administration, I have to say that Governor Baker has done an amazing job in the burden that he bears. And it's funny because now that I'm wearing the chairman's hat, leadership is not an easy thing when confronted with crisis. And you'll have highs and lows with respect to the administration of your office. But I cannot blame the governor because of the past history of county government. And again, this is really a conversation about in a referendum on what is the future of county government going to be. I was very careful not to, when speaking directly to the governor, to be critical of his programs. He knows, as we do, there's give and take. No one had a PhD in pandemic. And compared to other governors across the country, I'm glad we had this governor. And I really feel that the burden has aged him. And I wonder what his palate will be with the upcoming election. It would be a shame to lose an asset like that. But after being battle tested as you are, you know, sometimes it might be good to go off, but in the sunset. But he's certainly earned a rest. And I think all of our delegation, our senators, our reps, our town managers, our town accountants, yep, our selectmen, my God, Plymouth County and the Commonwealth, you know, compared to nationwide statistics, has done very well. And there was a hiccup with the rollout, you know, but you can't be 100% all the time. And I do want to say that I have nothing but the utmost respect for the governor and what he's done for this Commonwealth.
Got a few minutes left in our conversation. Again, we're speaking with Greg Hanley, chairman of the Plymouth County Commissioners, joining us for one of his many future conversations here on Monday Night Talk. One of the final questions I'll ask. So once you've exhausted all of the CARES Act funding, what then? Is there another round, but it's going to be under, is it going to be the American Rescue Plan Act funding from that? What are we looking at?
So right now we're very fortunate to get an extension of the CARES Act program till December 31st, 2021. Had we ended the program this year, we probably would have sent back close to $50 million of the 90 we received, because our program was a program of reimbursement. By getting the extension, we're now able to better service our communities and prepare them for CARES Act worthy reimbursement. So the good thing about Plymouth County is that the administrators and the managers all talk, and we post on PlymouthCountyCares.com all the FAQs and all of the public listings of eligible programs and eligible expenditures. And so there's been a network of going around to improve the CARES Act. But the next tranche of money that we are considering comes with sizable liability, and we are considering every avenue of taking on ARPA. But if it costs the county a tremendous amount of money to administer because of the liability end of it, you have to go back and really do actuarial studies and look at audited reports of revenue before the pandemic and revenue after the pandemic, because a major portion of ARPA is revenue replacement. Right off the bat, you are focusing where CARES failed to focus on shovel-ready projects that are infrastructure related, and that means water, sewer, streets, and broadband. That right off the bat, 27 communities and the county of Plymouth are eligible on a population-based spreadsheet of monies. But then what they do is they hand you the guidance, and that's what we're waiting for, whether or not we're going to take it, because the liability that goes with this particular tranche of money, they will come after you directly if you do not administer the funds per the guidance. So we're weighing it. We think as we go out and continue to hand out CARES checks, the response from the member communities has been an insistence that we run the program. Because if you, again, go down to the border of Bristol in Plymouth counties, where Marion and Fairhaven meet, the people in Fairhaven are not happy with the way things have happened with their role and responsibility and liability to CARES. CARES is very simple, Kevin. What you need for CARES is a warrant, an invoice, and a check, and the county reimburses. That's how simple it is. But with ARPA, ARPA gives you monies that require so much financial reporting that the people we contracted with on that low 1% overhead cost are not gonna be the same costs, because we're gonna have to go to larger firms because of all of the accounting and all of the financial records to formulate how the money gets distributed. And so it's a major task. Right now, where I'm a part of the Massachusetts County Commissioners Association. We're meeting regularly. We're receiving guidance from the National Association of Counties, which is a great resource for us. As you know, nationally, county government is the preferred form of government. It's a layered form of government where the distribution of responsibilities is spread out and is layered. Because we're parochial Massachusetts and the bad boy behavior of previous counties, people have been skeptical. And quite frankly, getting back to the subject at hand, county government, yes or no, on day one of this job, I would have said no. But 8 years later, it's a resounding yes.
Way to finish up strong. Definitely a way to finish up strong. We got to wrap this up, but anything you want to say as we say goodbye for at least this segment?
Well, I do want to recognize the efforts of former Chairman Dan Pallotta. The man is a genius. His problem was he didn't have the best filter, but, you know, I can sleep at night knowing that he has the blue ribbon for goat milking, and that's why we're going to return him as an ambassador of goodwill for the Marshfield Fair, and it's my hope that we have a fair this year because 4-H is killing it right now. They're doing such a great job.
I could sketch out a little bronze statue, Dan down on one knee, grasping a pair of udders. Can you see it?
No comment.
Okay. There he is. Greg Hanley, our guest. Greg, thank you for joining us.
Kevin, thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
You got it. We're going to step aside. And when we come back, more Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
What is AA? Alcoholics Anonymous is an international fellowship of men and women who've had a drinking problem.
It is non-professional and self-supporting.
AA is multiracial, apolitical, and available almost everywhere.
There are no age or education requirements. Membership is open to anyone who wants to do something about their drinking problem.
Call 617-426-9444 or find online meetings at aa-intergroup.org.
At South Shore Bank, helping you reach your financial goals is the priority, but helping you strengthen your community is our passion. Service is a commitment, but support is a calling. Success is the name of the game, but sharing success is the only way we win. As a mutual bank, we make sure that what's good for you serves the greater good, because here, profits are reinvested in our communities. Success, the feeling's mutual. Visit us today at southshorebank.com. Member FDIC, member DIF, equal housing lender.
Invest your time in listening to Cape Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. Cape Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD. Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Thank you for keeping your radio dial set here to 95.9 WATD. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk. And our next segment up is a continued conversation. I think more so chat a little bit about the latest chapter. I believe that it could also be a resolution that might have been struck, or at least some conversations, at least moving towards making sure that it's well represented. And what we're talking about is an item that we actually talked about in March about a peace flag and the elementary school. And joining us right now is Evan Smith. He's a Halifax resident. He was actually in on that conversation. He's had children in the school system. Just to kind of fill in or backfill in as far as your involvement, if you will, Evan, and maybe I'm not doing justice as to what the story is here. Again, this is a peace flag that was put up in a classroom, and that there was, well, it's something that has been embraced by the students and the children. There's been a little bit of a conversation about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there was a kind of rainbow colored with some flesh tone colors too. Peace flags that were put up in the fifth and sixth grade classrooms at Halifax Elementary School. As far as how I got involved, that was in back in January when this first kind of started becoming a public issue. Some people that are close to the issue and approached my wife and me confidentially because of some closeted LGBTQ kids in those classrooms. And they know that my wife and I are outspoken LGBTQ allies. And so they asked us if we can get involved a little bit as speaking out on the issue because they were a little too close to it to do so. So,
How is this issue progressed? Again, we know that through the conversations that we've had, because we've had two conversations on this radio program trying to at least represent multiple sides, you know, where the thought was, is that it ended up where it was something that was brought before the school committee and there was a conversation about policy. I believe that since then, there has been a movement to have a group come to some kind of a resolution, or is that not accurate?
No, that's true. There's been a bit of a resolution. Actually, I think a pretty good resolution at this point. Okay. In January, it started coming out. There were a lot of concerned people in town that emailed superintendent and the school committee. And, you know, there were standouts that were organized. Jay Klein, who was on the show with me, on your show with me earlier, was a high school student who organized some standouts, which were, no controversy or confrontations happened at those, except for I think there was a back the blue standout that had some people from outside of Halifax show up and try to counter protest that. And I think there was an altercation there, but, or not a violent one, but, you know, some confrontation, but, all the emails and everything that people had been sending, culminated, finally in a conversation on March 11th, which was shortly after the interview that, Jay and Lana and I did with you aired, where a meeting was had with the district and the principal at the elementary school, and a decision was made to form a unity committee, and that's just kind of the informal title of what the committee was called, to come up with a compromise. Rather than have the peace flag stay up, the idea was that there would be some sort of alternative messaging that would allow the kids in class to feel like they are welcomed and accepted, and that you know, they're included regardless of any of their, you know, LGBT status, racial status, whatever else it might be. And so that was pulled together fairly quickly. On March 22nd, the kids came back to school in person, and the messaging was up. It's not a flag anymore. It's like a little poster or something, you could call it. In some ways, it's even down to a sticker size on some of the door frames in the school. But it says it's a rainbow background with hands, kids' hands on it, on top of various different backgrounds, races, cultures, whatever. And it says, everyone is welcome here. So that was the messaging that was come up with in lieu of the peace flags.
How important is it for our children to feel welcomed no matter what environment, whether it's a school setting, whether it's a fun activity? How important is it?
I can't emphasize how important that is. You know, as a father of a gay son who, you know, made the mistake of not being as aware of his needs as I should have been when he was younger, I can tell you I've dug into the studies and I've researched the issues. And I know that when kids at young ages feel like who they are is controversial, that has lasting impacts on them, especially as they start to figure out more and more who they are later in life. If they've received messages when they're young that part of their identity is controversial, it's very damaging. So, you know, in hindsight, I wish in this whole situation that when the administration was approached and told that there was an equal access issue, because someone thought the peace flag was political, you know, rather than ask for equal access to put another flag that's been used in rallies and is political in many ways, to rather than have that also try to go up, it maybe would have been better to say, can we come up with an alternative messaging? And in the meantime, while we come up with that, let's leave the flags up, because they've been up for weeks already. We don't want to hurt any minority kids who see them taken down. Let's leave them up and come up with some messaging that reiterates who they are is not controversial. That would have, I think, avoided this whole thing if they would have just stayed up. The peace flags would have stayed up until a substitute could be agreed upon by everyone.
Yeah, if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Evan Smith. He's a Halifax resident. We're talking about the peace flag resolution, the discussion. Do you feel that this particular item, this particular issue, provided a teachable moment for all who are involved in all sides?
I do. I think, it taught a lot of us adults to be more aware of what's going on in our community. You know, there have been some reports, and it's not surprising given the political division that's been happening this year or the last year, that there were some incidents that parents had talked about at school of intolerant behavior and intolerant words among the students. So that was one of the reasons why there was such a concern when the peace flags came down, because a lot of us in town knew that there were issues at the school. And so to see the, you know, I wish people would have given the teachers the benefit of the doubt instead of assuming that the teachers were acting in a political way to try to impose their political views on students. I wish they would have thought, you know, why are the teachers putting this up? Is there a need for this? Are they feeling like the curriculum needs to be augmented with this visual aid, a reminder to the students in this divisive political time? You know, that's why I think there was such concern by so many people that some replacement messaging get decided upon early. And I think it's also, you know, those of us who are in majority positions oftentimes are unaware of the suffering and the perspectives of people in minorities, especially when they're not visible minorities like LGBT kids. It's hard for us to even be aware of those issues. So I hope everyone learned a lesson in this whole thing, that we should be more aware of minority perspectives.
Probably the one thing I would ask, and being somebody who has, I've worked in different settings, corporate settings, private, the company settings, but usually there is a order of operation. There's a way of going about doing something. And, you know, if there is an administration, is there not a question like that this was not something that was brought before the principal, the assistant principal, to say, hey, I'm thinking about putting this up, and maybe this could have circumvented this particular issue, or maybe this compromise could have been reached without hurting anybody on all sides?
That's a fair question. You know, there have been some people who have said that that was one of the things that was disturbing too, is that the teachers were kind of being thrown under the bus and being said that they violated a policy. But there's literally, I've yet to see any policy, whether it's a town policy, because that applies to groups putting up banners, or a school policy, which is only when a guest speaker's coming in, you have to get prior approval for a quote unquote controversial topic. I just don't think the teachers really thought that putting up what they viewed as a non-political, non-controversial flag that affirmed everyone's identities was something that they needed prior approval for. So
I would ask you this. So how many times did the Unity Committee meet? And are you going to continue to meet down the road?
Yeah, so I'm not on the committee, but some people who were our parents are on that committee. Were on that committee. Lana, who was on with me last time, is on the committee, and they met. I think they met a couple times and came up with the messaging. And I should say also, in the meeting where the Unity Committee was discussed and who was going to be on it was talked about, there was a strong suggestion that people from the other side of this issue also be on that committee. I don't think the administration did that. But going forward, there's actually going to be a new committee. So it's actually a formal subcommittee of the school committee is going to look over these issues going forward. It is called the Inclusion and Diversity Subcommittee of the school committee. So that was decided in an April 5th school committee meeting. There was a vote taken to form that official subcommittee. And that's a good thing, because then it's open, it's subject to open meeting laws. It'll have a representative from the school committee on it. It'll have some parents on it, some administration officials, curriculum people would be on that committee. If I'm remembering it right, I may not be saying exactly what the composition is correctly, but that subcommittee will now take charge of helping ensure, you know, the inclusion and diversity for all students is appropriately addressed.
So any idea as to, is this a permanent subcommittee, and in any information that you may have as to how regularly will they report back to the full school committee?
Yeah, I don't know exactly how regularly. My understanding is that it is a permanent subcommittee, which is great news, I think, for everybody, so that we can hopefully avoid some of this issue going forward, maybe. The Unity Committee, the one that was kind of temporarily, it was deemed to be temporarily established, I think. It's up to the principal whether that continues or not, but I don't think it, I suspect it won't, given that this new permanent subcommittee of the school committee was formed. I suspect that the new subcommittee will report back to the school committee at least twice a year. I think that's how often other subcommittees report in, but I'm not entirely sure.
As again, somebody who has been a part of this, whether you're fully immersed in it or you're somebody who is at least getting intel about what's going on, what are some of the things that you hope this inclusion committee or subcommittee will look to tackle and discuss? I would think that, you know, there'd be a few things that would be floating around in your head as a parent that you would make sure that they do regular temperature checks on certain issues.
Yeah, I would hope that they are finding ways to talk to the teachers about any issues that have come up in class. I think that was a big point of confusion in town, was some people thought there wasn't a diversity or inclusion problem at the school, but other people felt that there was. So I would hope that committee would have some way of touching base with the teachers who are on the ground. They're the front lines. They know what the kids are saying to each other in class. I would hope that they would at least communicate with them and see what sort of messaging should be coming that supports the curriculum. Again, like, you know, these peace flags were not against the curriculum. They're in the middle school and in the high school, and teachers didn't get permission there. It's very consistent with what's already being taught in the social and emotional learning aspects of the curriculum. So I would hope that the new subcommittee would have a good pulse on what's happening on the ground going forward, so they can respond appropriately as situations come up.
Is this something you think they can go to another level? Could this be maybe a town board, or could this be a citizens at large committee that meets regularly to make sure that there is inclusion within your community?
I think that'd be fantastic. Diversity and equity and inclusion committee or board would be fantastic. You know, if the selectmen wanted to form some sort of subcommittee of their body that addressed these issues across the town and in other contexts, I think that'd be fantastic. I don't know if that'll happen, but yeah, I'd be very supportive of that.
As we get ready to wrap up our segment, we got about 3 or 4 minutes left. Anything we haven't touched upon, or maybe anything I have overlooked asking you in regards to this situation and the resolution itself and moving forward?
Yeah, the only thing there's, I think, sadness on all sides that a division, a sense of division was created in the town. You know, any sort of advocacy or legal threats or whatever else might have happened on one side, or any sort of messaging that might have happened on the other, I think everyone hopefully learns from this and says what really was most important in all of this was to try to get to a conversation, right? All of those efforts were leading to a dialogue. And once that dialogue happened, compromise was reached. And I commend the people who reached the compromise. You know, Lana was on with me previously, other parents, Lauren, Gordon Laws, they were there. They all decided that it was more important to make sure the kids were protected, right, first, but also to find a way to bring the community back together. And that's what matters, is that there's unity in treating everyone equally. And I hope that lesson was learned, and I hope that the division that's happened in our town can be healed. I think that's what everybody is focusing on now.
Yeah, that's the tough part is the more opinionated we get, the more we delve into politics these days, we're seeing a pure division. And you know, there was a day and a time when you could have the two-party system, but at least members within said parties could find a way to meet in the middle. Does it seem like that these days that's becoming tougher and tougher, and you have folks who are like, there is no happy medium. You know, you're either on one side or the other.
Right. Yeah. You would think that coming into the same room and actually talking to each other would be an effective way to avoid the continued just misunderstandings that everybody's having. And it is sad that didn't happen for several weeks in this context, right? There were several weeks that went by when people felt like they just weren't being heard. And so things kept getting ratcheted up more and more media attention, more you know, just strongly worded emails and things like that. And it's unfortunate that that happened. And I wish that I hope going forward now with a formal subcommittee established that that sort of dialogue happens behind the scenes and doesn't have to become a public spectacle as much.
Probably the last question I would ask you is how closely will you be watching the meetings that the subcommittee, you know, whether they pick a chair or when they come forward, you know, what are the first couple of things that you hope they will at least discuss or at least share with the public?
I hope they discuss the permanent nature of the messaging, right? I think the alternative signage that was come up with is an amazing example of people just coming together to get a positive message across that's not controversial. And I hope that that subcommittee addresses whether that sort of signage and messaging will continue in the elementary school going forward. I think that's probably the first point, so that those minority kids feel like they're validated and seen in the school. And then going forward, some sort of exercises or activities that the students can have that further validates and promotes the inclusion and diversity. So any sort of curriculum augmentation that happens, I think would be appropriate for that subcommittee.
Evan, I want to thank you for your time and helping assist us to close out the chapter in this particular issue. And hopefully it's, you know, it, as I said in this conversation, that folks realize that there were teachable moments in this, and that hopefully Halifax can grow together as a community once again.
Yeah, I hope so too. Thanks for inviting me on, Kevin.
You got it. Again, Evan Smith, our guest, a Halifax resident, and talking about the Peace Flag resolution. That's going to do it for this segment. It's going to do it for the first hour of Monday Night Talk. We are going to step aside. And when we come back, hour two of the program. You tuned in to 95.9 WATD. Don't go anywhere.
WATD FM Marshfield. WBMS Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.
The ability to combine your physical and mental well-being with a simple over-the-counter remedy has arrived. From Fuse Health CBD products, locally sourced in New England, Fuse Health delivers completely natural, organically grown, 100% hemp-based CBD products to your door. Nurture sore muscles and joints. Enjoy a better night's sleep. Visit fuse-health.com to learn which edibles, tinctures, topicals, and oral sprays might work best for you. Visit fuse-health.com.
Are you worried about your drinking?
Or is someone else worried about your drinking?
Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution.
There is no shame in living with a disease called alcoholism.
Regardless of your age, employment, or any other circumstances in your life, you deserve help from other individuals who understand what you are going through.
Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution.
Call 617-426-9444 or find online meetings at aaboston.org.
Go ahead, indulge yourself. Every Wednesday night, tune in to Talk with Francesca and join me for provocative conversation, intriguing stories, and inspiration. So sit back and relax, or be stimulated, or both. Because being connected feels good. It's contagious, and I personally want to spread it around.
Don't miss Talk with Francesca, Wednesday nights at 9 on 95.9 WATD. Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk, and joining us for this segment, at least kicking off the second hour, is State Senator John Keenan. Senator, how are you? How are you doing? We're in May. I can't believe we're already in May.
I can't believe we're in May either. Time has gone by so quickly, but it's great to see you. And thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So while we have a chance to sit here and chat, probably one of the first things I would ask you is, how have things gone as to any bills or amendments that you've been able to file for this new legislative session?
Well, we filed a lot of bills, and the bill filing deadline was extended this year. So they have just been assigned to committee, and we will now start the process of each one of the bills having a hearing. In terms of legislation that we've taken up, just yesterday we took up a bill in the Senate following what the House had done relative to the construction of a new Holyoke Soldiers Home. And it will be a $400 million project with about 65% of the funding for that reimbursed by the federal government. And then in the Senate, we added about $200 million more to look at veteran services throughout the Commonwealth and to target areas, make sure that they're equitably distributed for additional veteran services, facilities, programs, and as I say, services. So in that bill, I filed three amendments. All of them were adopted by my colleagues. And the purpose of those amendments was just to make sure that every veteran in every area of the Commonwealth has access to equal care, equal services, and equal programming. And so that will be done by way of having a hearing in six different regions across the Commonwealth, by making sure that as they look at where these programs, facilities, and services are offered, that there's an eye towards whether they are accessible by public transportation. Because one of the things that I see and hear is that veterans who go to Brockton or went to West Roxbury VA, sometimes they have difficulty getting there. And thankfully, there are so many volunteers, but it is difficult for families as well. And so those are the types of things that we focused on in that bill. In addition to making sure that there's services provided, we want to make sure that they're equitably provided, not only by neighborhood, but by region. And also, we want to make sure that the project is a project that will be built in the right way. So there's a lot of work done on it, and I'm thrilled it passed, and my colleagues really worked hard on it. So it's a good bill.
How important is it that we make sure that we're taking care of the men and the women who have served our country, not only in times of peace, but in times of war, and that they get the necessary care and programs that are due to them?
It's so important. When you think of somebody who raises their hand, basically, and says, I'll step forward, and then commits generally 4 years of their lives to the United States military. And whether that's overseas duty or duty here in the United States, it's still 4 years of sacrifice. And we have an obligation to make sure that that sacrifice is matched with proper medical care, with educational opportunities. And when they're in most in need, whether because of medical issues or lack of housing, that we provide all of those things for them. It's part of a fair deal. And we have to make sure that we hold up our end of it.
If you're just tuning in, we are joined by State Senator John Keenan. He is my guest for this particular segment. Senator, I've long known you as a champion, prior to the pandemic, of folks who were battling addiction and the issues that we have had with it. And you have been instrumental in a lot of bills that have become law and a lot of measures that have become standard now. And I think you've continued that trend with some of the bills and amendments that you have filed this session. Are there any that come to mind that you'd want to share with the audience?
Sure. There's a few. One of the things that we were successful in passing, I want to say about 6 years ago now, and it arose as a result of going to the morgue in Boston, the Commonwealth's medical examiner's office, was we introduced legislation very quickly that was adopted that allows the Commonwealth to use all of its different data sets to inform us on trends within the substance use area, so that we know how people got to the point of using substances, to the point of addiction. We know what type of treatment they may have received, and we can model programs around that. And one of the things that we use that for was to determine whether medication-assisted treatment was appropriate within correctional facilities. And we found out that people who were coming out of correctional facilities were six times more likely to die of a drug overdose. And so there was an obvious need that hadn't been seen before for medication-assisted treatment within correctional facilities. So we introduced that and got that passed as a result of what we call the Chapter 55 data collection efforts. So one of the bills that we filed this session is to add an additional data set to that data collection program. This would be information from the Department of Revenue, and it would really help us get a better picture of what's going on. All the information is what they call de-identified, so it's not an individual basis. It's data in the aggregate that gives us a sense of trends. And the program that we developed is really a national model. And the folks who crunch all the numbers and do all the analysis will tell you that pretty much every week they get a call from somebody else in the country, somewhere else in the country, asking what it was Massachusetts did, how they're doing it, and how helpful it's been. So we have filed that. We've also filed again a bill to try to get insurance coverage for those who are seeking treatment for addiction, coverage for up to 30 days. We were successful in the past in getting it for 15 days. This bill would extend it for 30 days. Incredibly, although it's fewer, but incredibly still, insurers are denying coverage for substance use addiction treatment, and we've got to address that. We also, on the prevention side, we know that some people, many people, go down the path towards dependency and addiction as a result of being prescribed opioids. Our prescribing numbers, as a result of work that we did on our prescription monitoring program and physician monitoring, those numbers are way down, but some people still progress through dependency to addiction as a result of prescribed medications. And so we want to make sure that there's insurance coverage for alternatives to opioids. Incredibly, I could hurt my shoulder and a doctor without any sort of pre-approval from an insurance company could just write me a medication to address my pain, write me a prescription rather for medication. But if that doctor thinks that physical therapy or chiropractic care or acupuncture is better suited for me, that physician has to go through all kinds of hoops in order to get approval from the insurance company for that. So we're trying to eliminate those barriers to non-opioid pain treatment. We're also, there's an interconnection between mental health and substance use, and we want to make sure that if somebody is in a mental health facility that's equipped to treat their addiction issues as well, or if they're in an addiction treatment program that's equipped to address their mental health issues, that they don't have to go from one facility to another, that they can get the care in the place where they are, and that will be covered by insurance. Right now, in many instances, addiction treatment programs are only providing coverage by insurance companies for addiction, even though mental health is such a big part of that. So those are some of the bills that we filed. And just another one that I'll touch on very quickly is, while we have focused on opioid addiction for many years, while the rest of the country has had to deal with a methamphetamine issue, that's coming our way. And so I filed a bill, and I'm hoping to fast track it, to put a group of people together to study the issue, to report out in September, and to start putting programming and services in place so that we're not overwhelmed with a methamphetamine crisis like they have in other parts, like they have been in other parts of the country. It's coming. Just about 2 weeks ago, the DEA issued a warning in Massachusetts that pills that look like ADD medication that are out on the streets, Adderall, are actually counterfeit. They're not Adderall. They are pressed methamphetamine, 100% pure. And the DEA has advised Massachusetts and New England that the drug cartels have made a conscious decision to put these drugs into our communities with the idea of targeting a younger population. So we have to be ready. It's an entirely different response than what we have in place for opioids.
Senator, do you kind of feel that the general public has kind of, because of the pandemic, forgotten that we still had that underlying issue, that something that didn't go away? And if anything, it might have been exacerbated a bit because of the pandemic.
It was across Massachusetts, across the country, opioid overdose deaths were up during the pandemic. And we have become, unfortunately, just so used to seeing high daily death numbers. And here in Massachusetts, as we speak, we are still losing over about a dozen people a day, and 12, 15, 18, 10 people a day to COVID. And we are still alarmed by that. And we are losing that many people to opioid overdose deaths as well. You know, pre-pandemic, we were up to over 2,000 deaths per year. That was trending down, but now it's increased. So we were used to 7 or 8 overdose deaths a day, and to us that was alarming. And now, compared to COVID, it doesn't seem to be as alarming. But as those COVID numbers come down, as they are, it'll become apparent to us again that we still have an opioid epidemic issue and that people are dying unnecessarily and that we have an obligation to do the best that we can to address that epidemic, whether it's a pandemic with COVID or an epidemic with opioids, and hopefully nothing similar with methamphetamine. We have an obligation to get out in front of these things and to provide care and treatment for people.
It's such a scary prospect, knowing that we were dealing with opioids, and then you're talking about fentanyl. This is, fentanyl is very deadly, and it's got different forms. And then the methamphetamine that you're talking about, that's the next thing on the doorstep. I mean, I ask this as a rhetorical question. There's no real answer. But when does it end, you know?
I don't know. I did a lot of reading when I was a kid, and I read some novels, and there was one novel that stuck out to me, a book. It wasn't a novel. It was an autobiography called Foul. It was the story of Connie Hawkins, who was a basketball player who, because of a gambling scandal, never quite made it in the NBA. He was basically kept out of the league for many years. But I remember reading that book, and it was about him growing up in New York City and the prevalence of heroin in the community. He grew up in Bedford Stuy in New York City, and the prevalence of heroin in that community. But that's where it used to be. Unfortunately, it was confined, so it didn't get the attention that it needed. Only when it spread beyond that did it start to get the attention. So there has been an historical level of substance use and death related to substance use. And for so long now, we have just been so far above that historical level. And we have to get down to that level and then below. But we have to recognize that it is something that we are going to have to deal with always, as long as we have mental health issues, as long as we have access to drugs, as long as there are people willing to come up with the next new addictive drug, a dangerous drug, we're going to have to deal with it.
Changing topics from bills and drug addiction to finances, state finances. We know that last week the House of Reps, they did their budget. Well, guess what? State Senate's up next. I'm looking forward to the conversation. And have you had conversations with your communities in regards to local aid?
I have had conversations with communities relative to local aid. That's always the biggest issue. And based on some preliminary numbers and a preliminary agreement that was reached between the Senate and the House of Representatives, it looks like, for instance, a community like Abington will get about $800,000 more in local aid than last year. But just right next door, Rockland won't get really much of an increase at all, because of the way that the local aid formula, particularly Chapter 70, which is school funding, how that aid is determined. So we're looking to make sure that the aid is distributed equitably. Abington is in a relatively good position in terms of what it will get in local aid. There has been federal money for Abington through the CARES Act, which has been handled well. The money has been handled very well by Plymouth County commissioners and the Plymouth County treasurer. They've really done a good job of getting that out to the communities. There'll be more federal money coming, but we want to make sure that that recurring funding for Chapter 70 in particular, which is school aid, is in place. We passed the Student Opportunity Act in Massachusetts, which sets us on a path towards equalizing funding for educational opportunity across the Commonwealth. And this is the first year that we're really putting ourselves on a track to reach that goal. And local aid, Chapter 70, is such an important part of that. So that's going to be one of the main focuses going through the budget process, is to make sure that our communities get the resources they need to educate their students, to make sure that police and fire are funded, to make sure that libraries and all those critical services have the resources they need to really enhance the community.
I know one of the things that have been touted is that, you know, communities are getting, and I think that the state is getting a big chunk of from the American Rescue Plan Act. Does the Senate, does the legislature have any say in the potential $4 or $5 billion that we're going to get from the federal government?
No say directly. Where the Senate has been successful is in making and is advocating. The money comes in, and it will either come through the state government or the county governments. And in the past, with the last round that we got from the federal government, Plymouth County was the only county that took on that responsibility. Other counties are now contemplating doing that, and in the process, keeping administrative costs quite low. So it really will be determined by the governor and the county government, and then the funding will go to the local level to be spent as they see consistent with the guidelines put out by the federal government. And that's the key. It's going to be a bit of a process to make sure that municipalities are able to match spending with the requirements, because if they don't, there's going to be issues. But we're confident that the communities in my district anyway, they're all professionally well managed, and so they will make very good use of that funding.
Is it safe to say that the distribution of CARES Act funds by the Plymouth County government, or the whether it's the commissioners or the treasurer's office, has been a resounding success?
I think it has. In talking to the town managers and the town administrators, they have been very pleased with the work that's been done by Plymouth County. And there was some hesitation because it was a lot of money, and I can't remember the exact dollar figure, but there was a lot of money, and there was a question of whether the county had the infrastructure and the administrative processes in place to handle it. And they worked very quickly to make sure that everything was put in place quickly. And I've had conversations with the commissioners and with Treasurer O'Brien, and they've really done a good job. The towns have found them to be very responsive, and there's still other rounds of funding to come from that money for the local towns. So I congratulate them on the work that they've done. It seems to be working well, and they've done it by keeping administrative costs, while keeping administrative costs very low.
So as we wrap this up, anything you'd like to say in closing during this particular segment? And again, I thank you for your time.
No, thank you, Kevin. It's been great to be here, and it's great to try to get out in front of the residents of Abington, however that may be, by radio or by cable. So I really appreciate it. And just to let you know that we have continued and will continue to work on your behalf. There's a lot of challenges still out there, but there's also really good news on the horizon. The number of people getting vaccinated in Massachusetts is really high, and we're starting to see that in lower COVID cases, and we're seeing our economy rebound. The latest reports are that our economy is rebounding at a significantly higher rate than what the country is as a whole. So those are all good things. And if I just want to encourage people, if you've got your first shot and there's a hesitancy about your second shot, please don't be hesitant. Get that second shot. Give yourself and your family the protection that you need. And the world will open up this summer when people do that. Don't worry about side effects. I had the second shot. I think I was fairly typical. I had a sore arm, and 24 hours later, I was a little tired. Some people don't have any side effects. Many of my relatives have had no side effects. Others have something that, they explain it as like a sore throat, but it's nothing compared to the risk of the COVID virus. If we're going to get this under control, please get your first. And if you had your first, get your second shot, and continue to do all the things that we need to do so that this summer can be a great summer for everybody. I'm really looking forward to it.
There he is. State Senator John Keenan has been our guest for the segment. Thank you so much, Senator.
Great. Thank you, Kevin. Be well.
We're going to step aside. And when we come back, we're going to speak with Julia Wiper. She'll be our guest, talk a little bit about physical therapy and some locations if you happen to be in need for some assistance. Coming up in just a few moments here on 95.9 WATD, you're tuned into Monday Night Talk.
Dad, you think UFOs will ever come?
Well, I'm not sure they've ever been invited.
Can we invite them?
Yeah, but how?
Well, we've got a flat roof and Christmas light strings. We can spell out UFOs land here.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll hold the ladder for you.
Later that night, there arose such a clatter.
Dad, look out on the lawn! A UFO with a broken windshield!
Wow, better call Tiny and Sons. They'll replace that windshield and insurance pays.
Do space aliens have insurance?
Oh, they wouldn't leave home without it.
I'm Peter Brown from Tiny and Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. Our service is out of this world. Just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
Do you check your Google search results regularly? You should.
People often get their first impression of you or your business online. Negative comments on the internet can impact your life and your livelihood. Take control of your online reputation. Get your free reputation report card at reputationdefender.com. It may reveal negative posts from an ex-employee, upset patient or client, news article, legal issue, or even exposed personal information right there in your Google search results. Uncover what's lurking on the internet about you with reputationdefender.com's patented scan and get your free reputation report card. Or for immediate assistance with your reputation, call 800-401-6681. Our cutting-edge technology helps make your Google search results look their best. Call 800-401-6681. That's 800-401-6681. 800-401-6681. Or take the free scan at reputationdefender.com.
The People's Truth, a show dedicated to bringing communities together and keeping the truth alive. Join your host, me, Benny Rabbi, as we talk with businesses, organizations, and people around New England and the world in search of the People's Truth. Join us tonight at 9 p.m. on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. And we got a special segment here. How many times have you been, you've had surgery, you've had some kind of an issue, and your doctor's like, well, you know, the one thing that might help you is physical therapy. And usually there's somewhere to go. Well, joining us today is Julia Wiper. I want to make sure I say that right. She is the co-owner of, it's not just one location, it's three. So we have Hingham Physical Therapy, we have Whitman Physical Therapy, and we have South End Physical Therapy. And she's here to talk with us a little bit about physical therapy and the history of it. Welcome to the program, Julia.
Thank you for having me.
Talk to me a little bit about the history of what made you want to get involved with, why did you want to be a physical therapist?
Oh, why did I want to be a physical therapist? In our junior, senior year of high school, they tell us we have to know what to go to college for. And we had to pick something. So the thing I liked the most was sports. So I was talking to my coach about it. And she said she would make a list of all topics that involve sports. And then I shadowed them to see which one I liked. And physical therapy seemed to work well with what I enjoyed in trying to find a job that I would not hate the rest of my life.
Excellent. So what made you go out on your own? I would think that you worked with somebody for a while before you said, you know, yes, what? I want to run my own shop.
Yes, actually, I never thought that. My business partner is my cousin, and it was her idea. So she went to physical therapy school in Texas, and I went in Maine. And then we both lived in different parts of the country. I was in California. She was here. I ended up moving back and worked with her for a little while in a home health agency. And then she said, you know what, let's make our own company. Because basically the problem was we wanted to treat the way we wanted to treat without someone telling us how to do it and limiting us and how much time we had with patients. So we opened Hingham Physical Therapy in 2004 and decided we were gonna treat one therapist with one patient for a full hour. So we just wanted to do it our way.
And then you opened up the location in the South End of Boston.
Yes. Yeah. South End. We're right in the nice historic district. We have a few therapists in there, and we've been there about 3 years, I believe now, and it's doing really well, especially with all the fluctuations we've had this past year. So easily accessed on the first floor of a brownstone.
And then this past January, you opened your third location in downtown Whitman.
We did. So Whitman Physical Therapy is in right by Duval's Pharmacy. Has great, we loved it because it's right in the downtown area. And what Chris and I are, our goal is to have small community physical therapy clinics where everyone knows your name, kind of like Cheers, coming in and out, helping the people in the communities where we live.
Okay. So tell us some of the services that you offer that in your three locations.
There are some different things. In our Hingham office, we offer women's health as a specialty, which we're not currently treating in South End or Whitman, just because we do have our therapist, Molly, who works there, who does specialize in it. which we also have this interesting chair too called the Mcella, which is a new treatment in physical therapy where it actually does like 1,000 contractions within a visit. So you get stronger by just sitting on it for 30 minutes. But we do have regular physical therapy where you come in for any postpartum, any urinary incontinence, pelvic floor weakness, pelvic pain, which is hard to find in the area. There's not a lot of places that do it. We also treat vertigo, sports injuries, TMJ, which is jaw pain or clicking. Can't think of everything. Just specific manual treatments we provide, kinesio taping for sports injuries, cupping.
What?
Lots of things.
That's one heck of a list that some of these services that you offer. How about as far as telehealth? Do you do anything like that? Do anything virtually?
Yes. Telehealth was new to us during the pandemic. Basically, our therapist switched over within 24 hours when we decided we had to close down just to kind of keep everybody safe. And they just picked it right up and provided telehealth treatments, which we're still doing now as long as insurances are allowing it. And at the moment, they are.
All right. Do you want to name some of the members of your team? I know it's going to be tough. Now, I don't know if you can name everybody in all three locations, or do you want to just kind of some of the folks that you do have work besides your cousin that you work with on a regular basis?
Yeah, and our employees are amazing. They're the reason we're able to do what we're doing. They provide the care that we look to strive to provide for our community. So in Southend, we have Zach as our clinic director, and Nicole and Grace are helping out there. And then in Hingham, we have Molly as our clinic director. Sue, Helena, Autumn, Grace is also there. Heather, Deb, everybody. I want to include the front desk and everyone. Helena, I think I said. And then in our Whitman location, Laura is our clinic director. And we have Mike, Marcella, Courtney, Heidi, and Ava.
Okay. And folks who are tuned in, like, oh, she didn't mention me. Well, I kind of put her on the spot and asked her. The folks, so it's not her, you know, this wasn't a premeditated conversation here where she had, let me write everybody down that right. Didn't happen. Operating during a pandemic, what has that been like for your organization?
That was terrifying. We actually had to close for 2 months, although we were part of what they deemed as necessary, essential workers. People didn't want to come out of their house, which means we couldn't stay open and have our therapists coming in. And everybody was very concerned about their health and safety and didn't want to bring it back to their families. So until we knew more about it and knew how we could keep everybody safe and continue, we did close our doors for 2 months, which is when Chris and I had time to kind of think and figure out how we wanted to run our business, and ended up moving our practice from East Bridgewater to Whitman, which is our preferred location because everything is right in the center of the town. It's perfect there. We love it.
If folks want to find out more information, maybe they may want to give you a call or visit your website. What can they do? How can they find out more about you?
Yes, thank you. We have a website, which is www.physicaltherapyma.com. Because we do have, each clinic is named differently, even though we are one corporation as Hingham Physical Therapy. We have Southend Physical Therapy has their own Facebook and Instagram page. Whitman has their own Instagram and Facebook, and Hingham has their own Instagram and Facebook. We're also on Yelp. Basically, you can just Google it and find our phone number or any of our social media to reach out to us.
And is there anything that maybe I did not ask you during this conversation, but you want to make sure that you are sharing with the listeners?
Let's see. One thing that I would like people to know, because I know in the way medical practices are right now, there's a lot of buildings that have doctors in the building, and then there's a physical therapy practice in that building. And I would like people to know that they can actually choose where they go. So if you have a bad experience somewhere and your doctor refers you back to that place, you don't have to go. You can say, you know what, I actually prefer to go right down the street, or I prefer to see this one therapist that moved locations. You can advocate for yourself and just say, no, as long as your insurance is taken by that practice, you can go there.
And you accept all insurances, or is there a particular insurance?
We accept almost all of them. We have a couple that we're trying to get into. What happens, like, for instance, well, I can call out insurance companies, but BMC is an insurance. And right now, they kind of have a hold on letting new providers in until old providers leave. So although we would like to take it, we're kind of on a waiting list to get in there. But everything else we take, and we'll always check for people, so they can always give us a call and say, do you take my insurance? And we can let them know.
Okay, we're speaking with Julia Wiper, and we're talking a little bit about physical therapy. Again, they have three locations: Hingham, Whitman and in the south end of Boston. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
You got it. We are going to step aside just for a couple of moments, but when we come back, I promise, more Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
Liberty Mutual Insurance Company presents
and Doug. Check it out, Limu, a roadside carnival.
Step right up, folks. Test your strength.
Come see the fire-breathing baby.
Let's fan out and tell people that Liberty Mutual customizes your car insurance so you only pay for what you need.
Look, an emu wearing sunglasses.
Limu, you're famous. Only pay for what you need.
Liberty, 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 Liberty.
It's Small Business Month, and Dell Technologies and Windows are celebrating your unstoppable drive. Save up to 45% on powerful PCs with Windows 10 Pro to work from anywhere, plus top monitors and docks for the ultimate business setup, all with easy financing options through Dell Financial Services. Speak to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right business tech, server, storage, and cloud solutions at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL for Small Business Month savings.
This is Joanne Buchanan from South Shore Folk Music Club at First Parish Duxbury, inviting you to join us on Thursday, May 6th at 7 p.m. for our live Zoom open mic series. Join us for live music, poetry, applause, and good company. Please visit our website at southshorefolkmusicclub.org to sign up. Thanks for your support in keeping traditional folk music alive.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We return to the final segment of Monday Night Talk. I love using the analogy for this radio program that it's almost like a meal, you know. The earlier part of the show, it's almost kind of like it's the, you know, the you get the appetizers and then you get the entree at 7 o'clock and then it's time for dessert at 7:30. So our final segment is your dessert portion. Joining me as co-host and to talk about many things in the City of Champions, we have the 50th mayor of the City of Brockton, Robert Sullivan, joining us.
Hey, Kevin, my question to you is, what is your favorite dessert?
Oh, man, where do I start? If it's chocolate, it could be anything.
Okay.
Yours? What about yours?
You know, I love carrot cake and cheesecake, but I like apple pie with vanilla ice cream as well.
Oh, you could talk me into some carrot cake easily.
Yes. Easily.
So how are things in Brockton to date?
Yeah, I mean, we're still in a red classification. And again, you have to remember that because of our population, the way that they set the color-coded classifications is based on that. So we were yellow for 4 weeks. You have to be under 4.0 count. We're a little bit over that. We've upticked to red. But in terms of the hard numbers, 426 loss of life in Brockton as of this morning, 280 cases, 13,000, almost 700 cases. You know, we had some uptick over the weekend as well. And, you know, our vaccine rollout has been really magnificent. As the mayor, I was proud to roll my sleeve up when I qualified in the last phase, Kevin, and I took a Pfizer shot and I did it. It's a personal choice, but it's for my own health, but my family's health, and I want to be around for my kids and my wife. So, you know, we are doing clinics, pop-up clinics with DPH. We're going to locations in the city of Brockton to administer the shots. We just had a wonderful one on Saturday again, 9-1 up at the Shaw Center, just our local Board of Health and our school nurses. And then Monday through Friday, as you know, is the massive one that we do. And it's a collaboration with Neighborhood Health Center. We have the National Guard up there. We are using Pfizer and Moderna right now. And, you know, we are doing something, Kevin, coming up on May 6th and May 7th, which is groundbreaking. It's going to be Pfizer. So it will be May 6th and May 7th. It's at Brockton High School for the students. Anybody 16 and older. That wants to take a shot, we're going to be there. Dr. Cliff Murray, the principal, is supportive. Superintendent Mike Thomas is supportive. And, you know, it's all hands on deck. So we're educating and informing because there's a lot of misnomers and confusion about what the shot can do. And, you know, we are really excited. We're getting some positive feedback from the boys and girls at Brockton High School. And as you know, it's the largest public high school east of the Mississippi. So we have a lot of work to do. We're rolling up our sleeves, but we're getting the job done.
How has, I'm not sure if it was the last time we talked or maybe the previous time, because we talk on a regular basis, where actually we had Mike Thomas on, and we were talking about the slow progression of returning to school. How has that gone?
You know what? I mean, I'm a dad of three kids. It's been exceptional. It's exceptional. Now, you know, our boys and girls, our students and our staff, our teachers, you know, they dealt with a lot, you know, over a year of fully remote. And, you know, it was a challenge, to say the least. But, you know, we're the city of champions, and we might get knocked down, but we dust ourselves up and we off and we get back up. And the boys and girls are exceptional. Now that we're back, the hybrid has been, in essence, phased out. Parents and guardians can decide if they want the remote fully for the rest of the calendar year, school year. But, you know, we are seeing really just some positive responses from parents and from the teachers and from the students. My own kids are just thrilled to be back. Now, safe protocols are in place, Kevin, and mask wearing and social distancing, and our custodians and staff are disinfecting. And we've acquired these large, we call them circus tents. They're huge, so we can have outdoor band and we can have outdoor drama and we can have, you know, outdoor classes and eating. So it's been great. It's been great. There's been wrinkles. I mean, like anything, you know, all of a sudden you have a lot of buses and we need to accommodate, you know, parents that don't want their kids on buses and are driving. So we're managing, which is exceptional. And, you know, Brockton Public Schools, in my humble opinion, is one of the best in the nation. So we are stepping up and accommodating and providing really a quality education.
So I would also ask you, last week, the governor kind of put the parameters on opening up Massachusetts and is kind of given, you know, a date of, well, not a date, but he projects that maybe in August we could be at a place that we haven't been in a long time as far as, you know, the allowable number of crowds that are able to gather. Maybe even we can relax some of the mask ordinances that are in place. What are your thoughts in regards to, are you energized by the fact that this is a real possibility?
I mean, I think it's a real possibility if the vaccine numbers really climb. If people get the shots and get their second shot, I think it is a possibility. It's exciting. I mean, we all want to get back to whatever the new normal is. But again, I can only talk about the city of Brockton, and, you know, I need to make sure we have a safe, healthy community. So there is promise in the horizon. There's no doubt about that. You know, there is light at that proverbial end of the tunnel. But I really think what's going to be the driving factor on that is increased vaccine rates. So it's an education right now. Brockton's a diverse community, as you know, and many people speak many different languages. So we are all in right now. We're educating, informing, talking to our pastors, talking to our ethnic associations, going there. Moses Rodriguez, Council Lodge, former mayor, a good friend of mine, he helped collaborate with me in my office and with Board of Health. So we did an on-site clinic at the Cape Verdean Association of Brockton two times already. So I'm excited about what the governor is saying. I don't know right now. I can't forecast how August 1st is going to be, but it's hopeful, to say the least, Kevin.
You know, I think one of the things that while COVID-19 has been at the forefront of our lives, a lot of the things that were kind of major items that were concerns have kind of fallen back. You know what I mean? Instead of it being top five, it might be now top 10, or it might be top 25. One of them that folks, you know, I think in a community like Brockton, surrounding communities, drug addiction is something that's very real. But there's some good news on the horizon. I believe that you actually had a visit recently by New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft. Could you talk to me a little bit about that and some services that are going to be provided?
Yeah, I mean, the Kraft family has just been a really wonderful partner with the city of Brockton over the years. You know, the foundation helped rehab a playground. It's an awesome playground on Ward 6, the Fape Playground. Of course, we've had New England Patriots players come and read to the classrooms and give Christmas gifts. And Mr. Kraft and his family were nice enough to have the Revolution come over the years to do soccer clinics. Awesome, awesome events. But what they did with Neighborhood Health Center with their donation is life-saving. They acquired and paid for a van for opioid prevention, and it's saving lives. And it's just, it's a game changer. Sue Joss and Dr. Maria Celli over at Neighborhood Health Center have been wonderful, wonderful partners. I can't rave enough about them during the vaccine rollout and helping during COVID with testing. However, you know, that was the focus, COVID. And people are still dying from opioids here in the city and in the Commonwealth and in the country. So what the Kraft family has done is truly, I mean, this is going to save lives. And I am so supportive, and I welcome them to the City of Champions. And, you know, we need to continue to understand that people are battling addictions, alcohol and drugs every day. We know that the emotional restraints and issues that have caused because of COVID have heightened such abuses, and we need to provide wraparound services. So again, it was a gift to Neighborhood Health Center, but it's a gift that's going to keep on giving and saving lives, Kevin.
And how important is a gift like this during, you know, a pandemic, and knowing that it's something like folks have not forgotten that there are issues that we deal with in life, and addiction is one of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's so important. It really is. I can't rave enough about the generosity. You know, this is a very expensive apparatus that was given to the Neighborhood Health Center, and they're going to utilize that to the maximum efforts. And, you know, I have twice a week calls with Sue, you know, and she is just an unbelievable leader at Neighborhood Health Center. But, you know, we also have to realize that our community and our Commonwealth and our country has changed forever, right? Emotional and physical and financial changes because of COVID. So for Brockton, you know, we need to provide anything that is going to help people. And this is definitely going to be helping people. So I was just thrilled, and I applaud the efforts and the generosity.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan, as he is my co-host for this program. One of these days, we'll get him in studio, but because of COVID, we do things. It's our socially distanced type conversations that are patented that we've been doing since last March. And I'm definitely grateful to have you on. Changing topics, a good friend of yours that you served on the city council with, Tim Cruz, leaving the council. Talk to me about a guy like Tim Cruz, and not only serving with him on the council as an at-large councilor yourself, but now as in the position of mayor and working with him as well.
Yeah, I mean, Tim is just a great guy. He's just a great family, Brockton guy. We got elected the same year I was councilor at large. He was my councilor because I live in Ward 1. You know, his family has given so much to the city of Brockton. And of course, his cousin was the late, great state senator, Tommy Kennedy, who did so much for not just Brockton, but Plymouth County and the Commonwealth. So, you know, he resigned from Ward 1. He has taken a job in the clerk's office here, city clerk's office. Mr. Zioli, Anthony Zioli, who's just another wonderful public servant, had made a decision that he needed to bring on an assistant. You know, as mayor, as the administrator, I don't have anything to do with the clerk's office. It's unique. It's you know, it's in the budget, but it's they rely on strictly the city council for appointments and approvals. And Tim has just a wonderful wealth of knowledge. And, you know, he is going to be able to just help. That's what it's all about. Working together, collaborating. He's already come down my office many, many, many times, and look forward to working with him, and look forward to continuing working with Mr. Zioli, the clerk, right now. And my whole mantra is we need to all work together, right? So it's me working with the city council and school committee, our state delegation. And I want to thank Lita Cronin and Rep Cassidy and Rep Dubois and Senator Brady, right? And, you know, when we talk about Brockton, Brockton's in line to receive a substantial amount of federal money. And that's the federal delegation, you know, and I want to thank Steve Lynch, our congressman. So Tim Cruz is someone that I respect. I like individually as a person, but he's going to do a heck of a job in the clerk's office at City Hall.
What does the city do now with him stepping aside? Is there a special election, or do you forego it until we get city elections at the end of the year? Is it just waiting until, you know, just letting the legislative session end with 10 city councilors and then starting anew in January? How is that going to work?
Yeah, no. So the city council, I mean, that was germane to their legislative body. They took a vote. It was an 8-2 vote for a home rule petition that they sent up to Beacon Hill. I signed it last week, you know, and they are looking to not have a special election to save some money for the city. You know, elections are coming up. I mean, I took out my renomination sheets this morning, right? May 3rd, we could take them. I was there 8:30. You know, we're every 2-year terms here in Brockton for every local official. So that's school committee, that's city council, and that's mayor. So, you know, we'll be having, it's not a primary because it's nonpartisan. We'll have a preliminary in September, as you know, Kevin, and then the general in November. So the city council decided to do that. And, you know, I support them as the elected officials on the legislative body side. And we'll see how it happens in Beacon Hill. But, you know, they've passed it recently for the city of Boston. And, you know, I just know that. It's going to bring excitement because there's going to be some open seats, I believe, on the city council. And that's always good for the city to have some really good conversation during election time and good candidates.
How do you feel knowing that, you know, a majority of your term as, you know, first term mayor has been served under a pandemic? Are you kind of going, oh, my goodness, time has just flown. Here we are. I'm up again to ask the great folks of Brockton to, you know, have faith in me and reelect me to a second term. Are you looking forward to this opportunity?
I am. I mean, I love Brockton. You know me, Kevin. I mean, I bleed red and black, the colors of the city. And, you know, my wife's from Brockton, and we made a concerted effort to stay here. This is home. My parents are still here, and my in-laws are still here. And, yeah, I mean, I took off this January 6th of 2020, and about a month and a half later, we're dealing with a worldwide pandemic. So it's been COVID, COVID, COVID all the time. You know, my goal is to get us through this, and I believe we're heading in that right direction. But I had a lot of plans. I mean, when I took the oath that day, I had a lot of plans, and I did not, I wasn't able because of COVID to facilitate a lot of those plans, but there's a lot that I have been able to do. So, you know, I am running again, and I'm looking forward to campaigning. It's a different type of campaigning. And, you know, I humbly ask the voters to give me, you know, another chance to try to execute the plan that we had discussed pre-COVID. And, you know, politics is a funny thing. I mean, none of us expect certain things and they pop up. But you really have to, as Teddy Roosevelt said, right, do what you can with what you have where you are. And I really live on that philosophy. And we're not out of this yet, this COVID. And my goal right now is to continue to keep the numbers down. I want to get to a yellow. We have a lot of good things coming up. We're going to have in-person graduation at Brockton High in June. Marvel's Marvin Hagler Day, Kevin, May 23rd in Brockton. It was declared by Governor Baker. So, you know, in terms of politics, I just love to give back to the community. And I'm hopeful that the voters will realize that come September and November.
We'll hit pause on button on the marvelous Marvin Hagler Day. We'll kind of save that for the end of our conversation. It is where we're wrapping up the program. But I was driving through Brockton the other day, and I got to tell you, the continued transformation of the downtown core, the ongoing construction on Main Street, you know, the buildings that are going up near the on West Elm Street, Pleasant Street. The new Department of Employment that's just down the road as well. Talk to me about how the city is still the ongoing renovation, the refreshing of the downtown corridor. How's that going?
Yeah, no, it's exceptional. And I think I've shared this with you before. I made a determination not to pause construction during COVID, and it's reaped really wonderful benefits. It really has. We did it in a safe way, but at the same time, other mayors chose different paths. We're transit oriented here in Brockton, right? We have three stops. We have Campello, Montello, and downtown. The price point to rent here in the city of Brockton, you know, is unbelievable compared to some other municipalities, you know, and we're starting to see young professionals move here as opposed to, you know, Quincy and Dorchester and Southie and, you know, Charlestown. You know, they come into Brockton and they jump on the train. They're on South Station 35 minutes. And there's just so much opportunity right now with opportunity zones and with our ties and our TIFFs and, you know, tools in the toolbox to help developers come here. And I want to thank the Baker Polito administration. They've been very, very supportive. I took a walking tour with Secretary Mike Keneally and Dan Rivera, the the former mayor, Lawrence, who now is the CEO of Mass Development, and just showed all the strengths here in Brockton, you know. And if people haven't been to Brockton in a while, I ask you to come here. You're going to really, you're going to be surprised at what's going on. And, you know, every year it's going to change. We're going to just continue that train down the track. And I'm pro-business, I'm pro-development, and let's just roll up the sleeves and get it going.
What would you say is the latest wrinkle that folks may not be aware of, or that is in the works at this particular time for the continued development in the welcoming of all business to the city of Brockton?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at Brockton, you know, the opportunity to invest and really get a return on your investment is real. So it's not just local developers now, it's people throughout the Commonwealth. I've had so many Zooms over the last 6 months with people from New York and LA that are really interested. I'm from hedge fund companies to just private developers, you know, mom and pop shops and transformation of our old factory buildings, you know, and renovating and rehabbing. And you know, we have a wonderful school system, but our number one asset is our people. We have a skilled workforce here in the city of Brockton, but we have a lot of amenities. You know, the Milton Museum just relocated to downtown Brockton. So you want to go see a Picasso or a Remington or a Renoir or Salvador Dali, you come to downtown Brockton now, you know, and we have the Kraft Museum and we have baseball here. And, you know, there's just so much I could talk about, but at the end of the day, the number one thing are the people. And I say this kind of tongue in cheek, but I mean it. If Brockton was a stock, we should all be buying it right now because the upside is real and we're seeing that. And one thing I'm excited about is the Brockton Beer Company that's coming downtown. We're going to have a craft brew right downtown in Brockton. The old Kresge building, which is now Sycamore Grove, is going to be high end apartments above and a wonderful, wonderful dining / drinking opportunity downstairs. So, you know, we're going to continue to do what we need to do. I'm going to keep banging the drum. As you know, the Boston Globe just called us a runner-up as one of the best communities. I would argue that we're not a runner-up, but at the same time, people know that Brockton's real upside has and potential hasn't been realized yet. So as mayor and as a guy that loves Brockton, I'm going to keep showing people and articulating how wonderful it is. And I encourage people that are interested in investing in Brockton, give me a call, 508-580-7123. I'll meet with you. I'll talk to you and we'll meet with the planner and all the other entities to see if it makes sense.
Yeah, if you're just tuning in to this conversation, I'm joined by a show co-host and Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan. We have a regular conversation every couple of weeks just to kind of hit the refresh button and provide the latest information. A few minutes ago, you were talking about Marvelous Marvin Hagler Day coming up on, is it May 23rd? Yes. What are some of the festivities that are being planned to celebrate a true Brockton champion?
I mean, first of all, my condolences go out to his family, to his wife and to, you know, his mom and brother still live here in Brockton and right on Foster Street in Ward 2. And, you know, it was a sudden loss. You know, he is one of the champions from the City of Champions, right? And my humble opinion, he was pound for pound the best middleweight champ and boxer. Just unbelievable. Just his fights were historic. The Tommy Hearns fight, I watched it many times since his passing. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And he did beat Sugar Ray too. So I don't know what people are talking about on that one. But because he's passed, Governor Baker, when he came to Brockton with Lieutenant Governor Polito to tour the Shaw Center with us, he gave us a wonderful surprise. He has declared the 23rd of May, which would have been Marvin's 67th birthday, as Marvelous Marvin Hagler Day in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. So we will be honoring the champ. The family had already reached out to the schools to see if they could utilize Marciano Stadium. And we are going to do that. You know, it's going to be a 1 o'clock event. And, you know, we have to abide by the protocols of social distancing and COVID. So it can't be, you know, the large venue that I know people would want. But it is going to be something that will be respectful to honor Marvelous Marvin Hagler. So again, it's on the 23rd, which is Sunday. It's at 1 o'clock at Marciano Stadium, and I'm going to be excited to be there.
Now, is there also going to be an eventual street naming for Marvin?
Yeah. There is, Kevin. So the old Petronelli Brothers Gym, Petronelli Way, which used to be Ward Street, where Marvin trained and where Rock and Robbie Sims trained and Stevie Collins trained. I mean, some champs trained there. You know, we named that many years ago Petronelli Way, now after the two brothers, Goody and Pat, the trainers. And so we have a new street that we are designating, Marvelous Marvin Hagler Way. It's right across from the late Mayor Bill Carpenter garage that we just built, state-of-the-art garage that was built to honor Bill. And, you know, we have a lot of development going over there now. And the old gym is going to be converted to mixed use, commercial downstairs, residential upstairs. And, you know, we talk about Marciano and Hagler as the champs in Brockton, and that's true. And when someone passes, you know, you want to honor and respect. So in the ring, the man was unbelievable. And we're going to honor him for that endeavor. And again, it's coming up, and the council approved it recently. And I mean, I support that endeavor.
I would ask you this. Do you look that they, you know, there was a, I remember back in the day when there was, you know, the push to initially they were going to put the Rocky Marciano statue in Boston. And there was kind of a, you know, a discussion about going, well, what are you putting in Boston? The guy lived in Brockton. You know, there's now a statue. There's a stadium named after the champ. Do you see a day when we may have a statue or maybe a building named for Marvin?
You know, I will tell you this, that I'm supportive of that endeavor. I do think his sudden passing is so fresh and so raw that the family is still trying to, you know, understand that. So I can tell you that out of respect for them, I don't want to say too much. I mean, I have my own personal views. Without question, something should and will come to fruition. But again, you know, we have to take baby steps right now, because when someone passes, of course, it's just a raw emotion. So I can tell you that the first step will be on the 23rd. And, you know, as we progress along and we all kind of, you know, get through this terrible time, something will happen to honor him.
Excellent. We've just got a couple of minutes left. Anything you want to say as we close out tonight's program?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think my plea right now, and it's not just to people in Brockton listening, because your web is very wide, and there's people throughout the Commonwealth listening, is if you haven't gotten your shot yet, I know it's a personal opinion, but please do your due diligence, because as we talked about earlier, August 1 is a date that the governor set. And again, I don't think that's going to expand to the potential that we can do this summer if people don't increase the numbers of vaccines. So again, continue to be diligent, wear your mask, social distance, everything we know we have to do. But there really is some hope and promise from the governor's announcement. And I cannot wait to come down and be in studio, Kevin, soon with you. Again, I want to just thank you for what you do. I mean, your radio show is unbelievable. And I'm honored when you always have me on. We get along well, and it's always fun to be on. But the information sharing is exceptional. So kudos to you, my friend.
And thank you for always making the time. And you do it on a regular basis. You have a great staff, whether it's Carrie or Kim or even Missy, who I was chatting with this week, who is phenomenal. Kudos to her. But continued success and continued good health.